Mahabharata Chapter 20 Draupadi Dragged to the Assembly. The Pratikaman went quickly to the lady's chambers. Standing before Draupadi, he said in a trembling voice, O Queen, maddened by dice, your husband has lost you to Duryodhan. Therefore come with me to Dhritarashtra's assembly, where you will be engaged in some menial work. Draupadi stood up swiftly and dismissed the maid who had been tending her hair. Surprised, she said, O Pratikaman, how can this be true? Who would stake his own wife in a gambling match? Surely the king was intoxicated. Could he find nothing else to stake? When he had already lost all his wealth, including his brothers and even himself, he staked you, O blessed princess. Draupadi became angry. Go back to the hall, Pratikaman, and ask that gambler who has lost even himself if he was still my lord when I was staked. When I know the answer to this, I shall go with a sorrowful heart. The servant assented to Draupadi's request and returned to the hall. Seeing him return alone, Duryodhan yelled, Where now is the Panchala princess, foolish man? She has sent me back with a question, O king. The Pratikaman replied, Draupadi has asked whose lord Yudhisthira was when he staked her in the game. Did he lose himself first or her? Yudhisthira said nothing. He shook his head from side to side, seeming as if demented or deprived of his reason. Duryodhan smiled slightly. Let Draupadi come here and ask her question directly to Yudhisthira. We shall all hear his reply. The Pratikaman again left the hall. Tears fell from his eyes as he approached Draupadi's room for the second time. He stood before the queen, unable to speak. She asked him what Yudhisthira had said in reply. With difficulty, the servant said, O princess, the assembly is summoning you. It seems the destruction of the Kurus is close at hand. When the weak-brained Duryodhan wishes to take you before the assembly, he will surely no longer be able to protect his prosperity. Draupadi looked with compassion upon the distressed servant. He who is the great ordainer of this world has ordained this without doubt. Morality is said to be the highest object in this world. If we preserve morality, it will pour blessings upon us. Let not that morality now abandon the Kurus. Go back, O Suta, and speak these words to the virtuous Kuru elders. I am ready to obey whatever command those moral-minded men may give, for they are conversant with all the precepts of virtue. The servant folded his palms and bowed his head. He turned and left the queen's chamber and went again to the hall. Standing before Dhritarashtra, he repeated Draupadi's words. No one replied. Seeing now Duryodhan's eagerness and Dhritarashtra's complicity, they all sat with downcast faces. Yudhisthira then said to the servant, Go to the bitterly weeping Panchali and tell her that she should appear here, even though she is in seclusion and attired only in a single cloth. This is Duryodhan's command. The Pandavas looked up at the Kuru elders, who, even after hearing Yudhisthira's words, all remained silent. The brothers could not determine what to do. They were ready to challenge Duryodhan and his 100 brothers to a fight, but seeing Yudhisthira still silent, they did not move. Bhima, however, could barely contain himself, and Arjuna, breathing like a serpent, seemed to be on fire. Duryodhan laughed, enjoying every moment of his victory. He again addressed the Pratikaman. Go, O Suta, and fetch the princess. She now has Yudhisthira's order. The servant looked perplexed. He was always obedient to Duryodhan, but feared Draupadi's anger. He spoke hesitantly. What shall I say to the queen for a third time? Duryodhan snorted angrily. He turned to Dushasan. O brother, this foolish servant is afraid of Bhima. Go and bring Draupadi here. What can the Pandavas do now that they have become dependent on our will? Dushasan immediately rose and went straight to Draupadi, like a dog entering a lion's den. He said, Come, O princess, we have won you honestly. Cast aside your modesty and go before your new master, Duryodhan. O beautiful lady, you must now accept the Kauravas as your lords." Draupadi stood up, weeping loudly. She covered her pale face with her hands and ran toward Gandhari's chambers. Dushasan roared in anger and ran after her. He grabbed hold of her long, wavy hair and forcibly pulled her along with him. As he dragged Draupadi by her bluish locks, the shameless prince recalled how that same hair had been sprinkled with sanctified water of the Rajasuya. Ignoring her plaintive cries, he pulled her out into the palace passageways. Draupadi spoke to him in a low voice. "O rude one, O wretch, you should not take me before the assembly. How can I appear there in my present condition, dressed only in a single cloth?" Dushasan laughed. "It does not matter, O Panchali, whether you are attired in one cloth or naked. We have won you, and you must now live among our servant women as best you can." The Kaurava then dragged the wailing Draupadi into the assembly hall. She prayed piteously to Krishna and Arjuna. Dushasan threw her before Duryodhan, where she fell with her cloth in disarray and her hair disheveled. The Kuru elders could hardly look at her. Bhishma, Drona, and Vidura were unable to maintain their composure, and they wept openly. Dhritarashtra asked, "What is happening now? Is the Panchala princess here?" Then Draupadi rose up like a flame and addressed the assembly in an angry voice. "All the persons in this assembly are learned in the scriptures and devoted to sacrifice. Some are my elders and gurus. How can I stand before them in this state? The high-souled Dharma is bound by the subtle rules of morality. Only those with clear vision can understand those rules. I am therefore unable to admit even an atom of fault in my husband." Draupadi looked toward Dhritarashtra, her eyes filled with tears. By his side she saw Bhishma, Drona, and Vidura, their faces torn by anguish. Everyone remained silent as she continued to reprimand them. "How do you all say nothing as this wretch drags me into the hall? Surely, then, you are all of the same mind. Shame on you. The Kuru's high morality has been destroyed by this act. Drona, Bhishma, Katwa, and the king have lost their greatness, for none of them condemn this most vile deed." Draupadi fell to the floor of the hall, crying in helplessness and distress. The slender, wasted princess glanced at her enraged husbands. They were incensed to see her in such a state, and her glance inflamed them even more. Even the loss of their kingdom and wealth did not pain them as much as Draupadi's glance, which was full of modesty and anger. When Dushasan saw Draupadi look at her husbands, however, he again dragged her toward the Kurus. "Slave, slave," he shouted. Duryodhan, Karna, and Shakuni all applauded Dushasan and laughed along with him. Apart from those three, everyone else in the hall was afflicted with sorrow to see the princess treated in this way. Shaking his head, Bhishma fought back tears and said to Draupadi, "O blessed lady, knowing that one who has no wealth of his own cannot stake that belonging to others, but knowing also that wives are always at the command of their husbands, I am unable to answer the point you raised. The ways of morality are subtle. Yudhisthira can abandon the whole world full of wealth, but he will never sacrifice morality." The Pandava played with Shakuni, even though he knew no one could defeat him at dice. "He has staked and lost both himself and you, O princess. Therefore I am confused upon this matter." Bhishma looked up at Dhritarashtra, but the king remained silent. Draupadi spoke again. "Yudhisthira was summoned to this assembly by the king, and although he does not possess skill at dice, he was made to play with a skillful, wicked, and deceitful gambler. How then can he be said to have staked anything voluntarily? He has been deprived of his senses by the contrivances of sinful men acting together. This act lacks all propriety and will be condemned by all wise men. Here in this hall are many leaders of the Bharata race. Let them reflect upon my words and answer my question." Dushashan began to harshly insult Draupadi. She wept grievously and looked toward her helpless husbands. Bhima was afflicted beyond all endurance. Finally, giving vent to his anger, he said to Yudhisthira, "Gamblers have in their houses many loose women, but they never stake even those women at dice. They always remain kind toward them. You have staked and lost all of our gems, jewels, gold, armors, animals, weapons, and whatever other wealth we possessed, including our very selves." Even at this, my anger was not excited. "But I consider your gambling with Draupadi abominable. Having obtained us as her husbands, this innocent girl does not deserve to suffer in this way. Only because of you is she now being persecuted by these low, despicable, cruel, and mean-minded Kurus. Although you are my lord, I can hardly control my anger towards you." Bhima turned his massive shoulders toward the twins. "I shall burn Yudhisthira's hands. Sahadev, bring fire." Arjuna quickly caught hold of his brother. "O Bhima, do not speak in this way. You have never uttered such words before. Your morality has certainly been destroyed by these cruel foes. Do not fulfill our enemy's wishes. Practice the highest virtue and remain obedient to your elder brother. Remembering a Kshatriya's duties, he has played today only on the king's command and against his own desire. Such an act will surely make him famous." Bhima calmed himself. Checked by Arjuna's reproach, he felt ashamed. "You are right, O Dhananjaya. Our brother has surely acted in accordance with duty. Had I not known this, I would have long ago have snatched his arms and burnt them in a blazing fire." Both brothers looked at Yudhisthira in his distress. They knew he felt obliged by the presence of Dhritarashtra and Bhishma. If those two elders did not speak out against what was happening, then Yudhisthira would not object to the proceedings. Duryodhan's hearty laughter rang out again. He was relishing his cousin's discomfort. He was especially enjoying Draupadi's distress, remembering how she had laughed at him in the Maya Sabha. Draupadi buried her head in her hands and wept. Her husbands glared furiously at the insolent Duryodhan, but still the Kuru elders remained silent. Finally, Dhritarashtra's son, Vikarna, spoke out. "O kings, answer Draupadi's question. If we do not decide a matter referred to us in the royal assembly, then we shall descend into hell. Dhritarashtra, Bhishma, Vidura, you are the eldest of the Kurus, yet you do not say anything. Why are Drona and Kripa silent? Let the kings who have assembled here from all directions leave aside their anger and give Draupadi a reply." Vikarna looked around the assembly, but still no one spoke. He repeatedly asked that Draupadi's question be answered. Had she been one or not? Was she now the Kaurava's slave? The silence in the great hall was broken only by Draupadi's sobs. After another agonizing minute had passed, Vikarna said, "If no one will respond, then I shall say what I consider just and proper. O best of men, it is said that there are four vices to which kings are prone: hunting, drinking, womanizing, and gambling. The man addicted to these vices lives by forsaking virtue. Therefore, that which is performed by one under the sway of these sins cannot be taken seriously. Madly under the influence of gambling and urged on by the sinful Shakuni, Yudhisthira staked this princess. She belongs to all the Pandavas and was lost after Yudhisthira had already lost himself. Nor was Yudhisthira playing the game willingly. Rather, the king invited him here to oblige him to play an unfair match. Considering all this, I say that Draupadi has not been won." As Vikarna sat down, the assembly was in an uproar. Practically everyone applauded him and censured Shakuni. Karna at once leapt up and waved his huge arms about to silence the assembly. His angry voice boomed. "O Vikarna, I have observed many improper things in this assembly, and your words are an example of one of them. Like fire springing from a log, your anger will simply consume you. All the great personalities among the Kurus are silent. Obviously, this means they consider Drupada's daughter fairly won. You are immature, therefore you rail in anger, even though you do not know the laws of morality, and speak like a fool. Yudhisthira has staked her as a fair bet and lost her. Karna, like Duryodhan, still remembered his humiliation when Draupadi refused to allow him to compete in her Swayamvara. The pain of that refusal still rankled. Well, he thought, the proud princess is now getting what she deserves. He turned to the assembly and argued that there was no sin in bringing Draupadi into the hall in her present state. After all, she had already accepted 5 husbands. What kind of moral woman was she? In his opinion, she was unchaste. He pointed to Draupadi as he spoke. For such a woman, there is nothing wrong, even if she is brought naked into an assembly. Indeed, she now belongs to the Kauravas, and must obey our command. O Dushasan, why not take off her robes, and remove also the Pandavas' royal dress, too? They are no longer kings. Bound by morality, the Pandavas slowly removed their upper garments and threw them down. They sat silently as Dushasan approached the wailing Draupadi. The Kaurava took hold of the end of her cloth and pulled on it forcefully. Draupadi held her sari tightly in an attempt to protect herself, but it was useless. Her strength was nothing compared to Dushasan's. She looked again at her 5 husbands. It was obvious they could not help her. As Dushasan pulled harder, she looked around the hall like a frightened deer assailed by a lion. There was only one person now who could save her, Krishna. The Supreme Personality saw everything and was always her shelter. Draupadi fixed her mind on Krishna, threw up her hands and cried, O Govinda, O Keshava, O beloved of the gopis and lord of Vrindavan, O Janardhan, you are the destroyer of all affliction. I am sinking into the Kuru ocean. O Lord, O soul of the universe, O creator of the world, save me who am distressed and losing my senses in this evil assembly. From where he was seated in Dwarka, Krishna heard Draupadi's piteous cries. He expanded himself by his inconceivable power and went swiftly to Hastinapur. By his mystic potency, he immediately entered the assembly hall. Without being seen by anyone, he provided Draupadi with an unlimited supply of cloth to cover her. Dushasan pulled and pulled at her sari, and as he did so, the princess spun around. But he could not disrobe her. There seemed to be no end to her sari. The astonished prince pulled with even more strength, but Draupadi remained covered. Soon a large heap of cloth lay piled on the floor. Seeing this wonderful event, all the kings praised Draupadi and censured Dushasan. The prince was exhausted from his futile attempt to undress the Pandava's wife. He sat down, perspiring heavily. Bhima leapt up and raised his arms. O kings of the world, he thundered, listen to my words. I shall now make a vow unlike any that has been made before, nor shall such a vow be made in the future. If I do not forcibly tear open the breast of this sinful wretch on the battlefield and drink his blood, then may I not obtain the path of my ancestors. Hearing Bhima's terrible words, the kings applauded him and again censured Dushasan. A clamor arose. Shouts of shame, shame filled the hall. Vidura once more brought silence to the hall. He turned to Dhritarashtra and Bhishma. O learned men, you do not answer Draupadi's question, and thus in this assembly we persecute religion. A distressed person comes to an assembly of good men like a man feeling the heat of a blazing fire. The assembly should extinguish his fire and cool him with truth and morality. The distressed man asks about his rights according to morality, and he is entitled to an answer. O king, Vikarna has offered one answer to Draupadi's question, according to his own knowledge and judgment. Now you should also reply. Bhishma, Drona, and Kripa looked expectantly at Dhritarashtra. They were unable to tolerate any more from Duryodhan. Still, the blind king remained in silence. Vidura continued, "One who knows the rules of morality, yet sits in an assembly without properly answering a question, receives a sinful reaction. Listen as I recount the ancient history of Prahlad and the son of a rishi named Agnirasa." Vidura described how Prahlad's son, Virochan, had once quarreled with a rishi named Sudanva for the sake of a bride. They had both gone to Prahlad and asked, "Which of us is superior? Answer us truthfully." Prahlad looked at both of them but said nothing. Sudanva became angry and said, "If you do not answer, or if you answer falsely, then your head will break into 100 pieces. Trembling with fear, Prahlad then consulted the celestial sage Kashyapa. "O exalted one, tell me what regions are obtained by one who, being asked a question, does not reply or answers falsely." Kashyapa said, "He who knows but does not answer out of temptation, anger, or fear is bound by Varuna's 1,000 nooses. He who is called as a witness but who speaks falsely is similarly punished. After 1 full year, one of the nooses is loosened. Therefore one should speak the truth as he knows it. If virtue pierced by sin goes to an assembly, it is the duty of every man there to remove the dart. If they fail to do so, then they will be pierced by that same dart. In an assembly where a censurable act is not rebuked, every member of that assembly is afflicted by sin. Grief will overcome them all in due course." After hearing Kashyapa's words, Prahlad said to his son, "Sudanva is undoubtedly your superior, as much as his father, Agnirasa, is mine." Sudanva immediately blessed Prahlad. "As you have spoken the truth without being moved by affection for your son, may he live for 100 years. Vidura concluded, "Hearing this great instruction about religion, let all those present deliberate on what should be done. Draupadi should be given an answer." Still, there was silence in the hall. Seeing the Kuru elders saying nothing, and considering the silence, approval of her condition, Karna spoke to Dushasan, "Take the servant woman into the inner apartments." Dushasan again grabbed Draupadi's hair and began to drag the helpless princess, who was trembling and crying piteously to her husband's. Pulling herself free from his grasp, she addressed the assembly in tearful words, "Wait a little, O worst of men. I have not as yet offered my respects to my superiors. Forgive me. It was not my fault, as I was forcibly dragged here by this low wretch, the disgrace of the Kurus. The morality of the Kuru house has been lost forever today. Never before have we heard of a married woman being brought in this state before an assembly. She who was never before seen even by the wind or the sun has now been exposed before all men. Indeed, I am being publicly persecuted by wicked men." Dhritarashtra listened with his head bowed down as she went on, "What could be more distressing for me than that? Although I am high-born and chaste, the Pandava's wife and Krishna's friend, I am nevertheless dragged into this assembly. Where is the religion of all these kings? O Kauravas, answer me truthfully. Am I, Dharmaraja's lawful wife, born in the same order to which he belongs, to be considered a servant woman or not? I shall be obedient to your command. O Kurus, this despicable destroyer of Kuru fame is cruelly dragging me. I cannot tolerate it any longer. Tell me what I should do, and I will happily obey you." Bhishma shed tears as Draupadi spoke. He looked at her with compassion and said, "O blessed lady, I have said that the ways of religion are subtle. Even wise men find it hard to understand them. Sometimes what a great and powerful man calls religion is accepted as such, even though it may not normally be so. What a weak man says, no matter how moral it may seem, is generally disregarded. From the importance of the matter you have raised, its intricacy and subtlety, I find myself unable to answer you." Bhishma stopped and looked around at the silent assembly. Turning back to Draupadi, he continued, "It is certain that as the Kurus have become slaves of greed and folly, our race will soon be destroyed. O Panchali, that even under today's circumstances you would turn to religion shows how worthy you are and adds glory to our house. Your husbands are equally praiseworthy. They do not deviate from virtue in such difficulty. The Kauravas, however, sit with downcast faces. They look as if they are dead. I do not think they are going to answer you. You should ask your question of Yudhisthira. He alone should say whether or not you have been won." Draupadi wept like a female osprey. Still the kings remained silent. They appeared to be afraid of Duryodhan's power. The Kaurava prince continued to smile even after hearing Bhishma's words. Rising, he said to Draupadi, "O Panchali, I agree with Bhishma. The answer to your question depends upon your husband. Let the illustrious Yudhisthira, resembling Indra himself and ever devoted to virtue, state whether or not he acted rightly. If he declares himself to have gambled you away falsely because he was no longer your lord at the time, I shall free you. I will also free his brothers if he makes the same declaration about them. Let Yudhisthira tell us first, however, that he has lost his discrimination." "After Yudhisthira has spoken, O thin-waisted lady, then you should accept either ourselves or the Pandavas as your lords. All the Kurus here are floating in the sea of your affliction. They are naturally magnanimous. Therefore, looking at your unfortunate husbands, they are unable to answer your question." Again the assembly erupted. Many kings applauded Duryodhan's words. Others cried out, "Alas!" and "Oh!" But each now turned to look at Yudhisthira, eager to hear what he would reply. As the hum of voices gradually died down, Bhima stood suddenly. His voice filled the hall. "If the high-souled Dharmaraj were not our lord and guru, then we would not pardon the Kuru race. But he is the lord of all religious and ascetic merits. Indeed, he is the lord of our lives. If he considers us one, then we are one. If it were not so, then who is there among mortal creatures on this earth who could escape with their life after touching the hair of the Panchala princess? Look at my two arms. They are maces of steel. Having come within their grasp, who could escape? Not even Indra himself. Bound by the ties of virtue and by the reverence due our elder brother, and because I am being repeatedly urged by Arjuna to remain silent, I do nothing. But once commanded by Yudhisthira, I would, by means of my slaps alone, kill Dhritarashtra's sinful sons as a lion kills a flock of small animals." Hearing Bhima speak, Bhishma, Drona, and Vidura said with alarm, "Be peaceful, O Bhima. Anything is possible for you." Karna then jumped up from his seat. "It seems that Katva, Bhishma, and Drona are independent," he exclaimed, his face red with anger. "They always censure their master and never wish for his prosperity. I shall say what is right in this case. The slave, the son, and the wife are always dependent. Whatever they possess belongs to their master. O Draupadi, you are the wife of a slave who is now incapable of possessing anything of his own. Go then to the king's inner quarters and serve his relatives. Select another husband who will not lose you at gambling. Your husbands are all slaves and cannot be your masters any longer. Obviously, Yudhisthira considers that life and manhood are useless, as he has offered Drupada's daughter as a stake in the presence of this assembly." Bhima gazed at Karna as if to burn him with his eyes. Breathing heavily, it seemed he was about to leap forward at any moment. Still, he remained obedient to Yudhisthira. Bound by virtue, he did nothing. Looking around, as if to burn everything with his blazing eyes, he turned to Yudhisthira and said, "My lord, I cannot become angry at the word of the Sutta's son, since we are now slaves. O king, could our enemies ever have spoken in this way in my presence, if you had not staked this princess?" Yudhisthira sat silently, stunned. Duryodhan laughed and said, "Come, O king, tell us the truth. Is Draupadi won or not?" Reveling in his cousin's anguish, Duryodhan smiled at Karna. To further insult and incite Bhima, the Kaurava prince then uncovered his right thigh, which resembled the trunk of an elephant, and showed it to Draupadi. "Sit here upon the lap of your new lord, O princess. What have you to do with the Pandavas now?" Bhima could take no more. He exploded. "Hear this, you wretch. If I do not break that thigh in battle, then let me not attain the regions of my ancestors." Fire was emanating from every part of Bhima's body as he spoke, and his heavy chest rose and fell like the ocean. Vidura jumped up and addressed the assembly. "O kings, observe the danger we are now in from Bhima. A calamity threatens to overtake our race. This has been sent by destiny. Dhritarashtra's sons have gambled deceitfully, and now they are quarreling over a woman. This kingdom's prosperity is at its end. Alas, the Kurus have given way to iniquity. This entire assembly is now polluted by sin. O kings, take to heart the precept I shall declare." Having first lost himself, Yudhisthira was unable to lose Panchali. She cannot be considered a slave. Duryodhan looked at the agonized Pandavas. "I am willing to abide by the decision of Bhima, Arjuna, and the twins. Let them declare that Yudhisthira is no longer their master, and I will free Draupadi." Arjuna retorted, "Yudhisthira was certainly our lord and master before he began to play. Having lost himself, let the Kurus decide whose master he is now." As Arjuna spoke, a jackal suddenly cried out in Dhritarashtra's nearby sacrificial chamber. Asses brayed in response, and fearful birds cried in all quarters of the sky. Seized by anxiety, Bhishma and Drona cried out, "All peace!" Vidura urged the king to do something before total disaster overtook them. Dhritarashtra at last accepted that things had gone too far. He had remained silent long enough. Raising his hands, he silenced the assembly, which was in chaos because of the evil omens. The king said, "O wicked-minded Duryodhan, O wretch, you are already as good as dead now that you have insulted the wife of the Kuru chiefs in this way, especially the Pandava's wife, Draupadi." Dhritarashtra knew that they now faced grave danger. If he did not appease the Pandavas, then united with the invincible Krishna, they would wreak a terrible vengeance upon the Kauravas. The king attempted to console Draupadi. "O Panchali, please ask from me any favor you may desire. Chaste and always devoted to virtue, you are the foremost of all my daughters-in-law." Draupadi looked up at Dhritarashtra, who had said nothing while she was being persecuted. She knew he had relented only out of fear. Still, this was her opportunity to rectify the situation. She bowed before the king and said, "O best of the Bharata race, if you desire to do me good, then let Yudhisthira be freed from slavery. He is the father of my son, Prativindya. Let not people speak of that boy, born and raised as a royal prince, as if he were the son of a slave." Dhritarashtra replied, "O blessed girl, it shall be so. Ask for another favor. I am not satisfied by giving you only one boon." "Then also free Bhima, Arjuna, and the twins, along with their chariots and weapons." Dhritarashtra again granted the favor without hesitation, and then he asked Draupadi to request a third boon. This time the princess said, "O king, greed destroys virtue. I dare not ask a third favor. Indeed, the scriptures ordain that a Kshatriya woman may ask no more than two boons. My husband's, being freed from slavery, will be able to obtain prosperity by their own virtuous acts. Karna broke out laughing. Just see how these great heroes have been saved by a woman. When they were sinking in the boatless ocean of distress, this beautiful princess became the boat of their salvation. I have never heard of such a thing before today. Bhima flared, but again Arjuna checked him. Desist, brother. Great men never care for the harsh words uttered by inferior men. Even if able to retaliate, they do not take seriously acts of hostility, preferring instead to remember even a little good that their enemies may have done them. Bhima was hardly pacified by Arjuna's words. He spoke in a low voice to Yudhisthira, I shall at once kill all these foes. What need is there for further discussion? O Lord, you may then rule the earth without a rival. Bhima repeatedly cast angry glances at the Kauravas, even as a lion looks at a herd of small animals. Arjuna restrained him with appealing looks, placing his hand on his brother's heaving shoulder. Smoke, sparks, and flames issued from Bhima's ears, mouth, and nostrils as he fought to restrain himself. With his furrowed brows and red eyes, he appeared like Yamaraj at the time of universal destruction. Yudhisthira embraced him and said, Be peaceful, brother. He then turned to Dhritarashtra. O King, you are our Lord. Command us. What should we do now? Dhritarashtra replied, Go in peace, Ajatashatru. You are full of humility and you wait upon your elders. Therefore you are wise. Those who are wise do not remember an enemy's hostility. Instead, they see only the good in them. Only the worst of men use harsh words in a quarrel, while superior men do not react when provoked. Knowing their own feelings, they can understand the feelings of others. Therefore, they always act with compassion, even toward their enemies. Dhritarashtra then begged Yudhisthira to forget Duryodhana's harshness and to try instead to remember whatever kindness the king and his wife Gandhari had shown him. He told Yudhisthira that he had allowed the gambling match in order to examine the strengths and weaknesses of his children and the Pandavas. The king concluded, In you, O Yudhisthira, is virtue, in Bhima, prowess, in Arjuna, patience, and in the twins there is pure reverence for and service toward superiors. Go then, all of you, and live in peace. Return to your own kingdom. Let there be brotherly love between yourselves and my sons. Be ever fixed in virtue. The Pandavas bowed before the king and then left. They ascended their chariots with Draupadi and started for Indraprastha. The assembly broke up and all the kings retired to the palatial mansions provided for them by Dhritarashtra. As they left the hall, some of them praised Yudhisthira and others Duryodhana. The blind king was led away by Vidura. As he recalled the heinous wrong committed by his sons toward the Pandavas, and especially toward their wife, he became gripped by fear. Giving them their property could hardly repair the damage that was done by the insult to Draupadi. Bhima would certainly never forget his vows, and at the first opportunity would doubtlessly take his revenge. Sighing, the Kuru monarch entered his chambers and began his evening prayers.